up in the cab a little bit. But I never did ride with Rich. He was a Mason.
Pardon?
He was a Mason.
Ernie.
Ernie was a Mason.
Yeah.
He used to tend lodge once in a while down here. One time he was down here on a work train. I had a work train here and he'd run that. And when he was here in Kennecke on that work train, well, he used to tend lodge here. And then he got on the main line and then he finished up on the Spokane Lewiston. That's right. Finished up his run.
Did you have some questions, Erica?
Oh, yeah. I got the questions we didn't. We ran out of time on last time. I've kind of forgotten where it was. I was thinking about the train. Did people use the train a lot more?
Oh yeah. They used to have when they first built this train here. They had three trains down and three trains up a day. Then they cut it down to four trains, two down and two up. And then on up the last, they had one down and one back. It just come down, turn around, look, and go back, and it got so it wouldn't pay. Hmm. No train at all.
Well, a train runs out there occasionally, I've seen lately.
Not a passenger train.
No.
It's just freight.
Just freight.
It's all freight. Oh, yeah, there was six passenger trains here besides the freight.
Well, if you wanted to go somewhere, would you go on down to Kendrick and catch it out of there?
Sure.
Used to. You could go down there in Black Creek Canyon and catch it.
Well, I never did that, but I guess it's possible.
Oh, yeah. You stop there at Boulevard, that's a double track. It's a stop, you know. You go to Boulevard and they'd stop and pick you up.
What's Boulevard?
Well, it's right down, you know, where Melvin Jr. is.
Yeah.
It's just over the hill from him right now. It's a double track. Mm-hmm. Trains pass there. Mm-hmm. You got a telephone in a little house down there. Now that's Boulevard. And if you want to get on the train and go to Kendrick, instead of going to Kendrick, you just cut down over the hill a foot.
Hmm.
And you be there and the train there and they stop and pick you up.
Hmm.
And let you off. You know. They wouldn't do it now, I'm sure.
No.
It's too independent now. No, everybody went on the train. We didn't have buses and Greyhound wasn't thought of.
The buses and the trucks put the railroads out of business. And it's kind of a shame too.
Good roads. Now the airplanes and everything.
Taxpayers are building the roads. For the cockeyed truckers.
Yeah.
And the buses.
That's one thing the railroad company, when they come in here, they bought their right of way. The government give them a lot of land for right of way. They built their own depots and tracks and stuff, and they charge you to ride on it. An airplane, you've got to build them an airport before they'll land to pick you up. That's the truth.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. That's always stuck in my craw. Why we had to build an airport for an aircraft outfit to land to pick you up?
Yeah.
The railroads didn't ask for it.
No.
No, sir. Well, it's only going to be a short time for Lewis. They don't have no facilities out there. They're closing them out just as fast as they can.
The government has helped the cockeyed airline. I just don't know how many million they've given them.
Well, they're priming the pump all the time for them.
Yeah.
Well, Lewiston, they keep taking flights off every little while.
Yeah.
They take another flight off. And it ain't going to be very long. Moscow, there's nothing stopped there except just a little that Cascade outfit. And once in a while, a prop jet.
Yeah.
And Lewiston getting trimmed down. The DC-9, that morning flight that comes through there. And the one we come back from Seattle on from Alaska last fall, it's taken off. And then it's just going to gradually keep it taking it off. They don't like to stop a little place like this.
What do you think?
Until they get the regional airport over here, and I doubt whether Pullman and Moscow and Lewiston, Clark and Lewiston want to rule everything, they want everything in Lewiston, but they just won't face it. Because if they don't, they ain't going to have nothing. But the aircraft outfit is just going to pull out and leave them, sitting there high and dry.
Oh, what? They have a good airport in Lewiston, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Don't jets land there and take
sure,
them?
Sure, the big nines land there. Moscow's got an airport out here that's 1,000 feet longer. Their runway is 1,000 feet longer than one in Lewiston, and they can't get a DC-9 to land there.
Not enough passengers?
It's too close to Lewiston. They don't hardly get off the ground in Lewiston until they're stopping at Moscow. Huh. And we went to Seattle last fall, and And by golly, they take east and they circle around over the east side of the orchards and come around over Hathaway Creek and look down to see Lewis and the Roundup Grounds and PFI and all of them down there. And by the time you, well, before you get to the top of the hill, because you're up quite a ways,
yeah.
By the time you get to the top of the hill, you look down here on the right hand and there sits the Moss Corn Pullman. But they don't hardly get off the ground, so they'd be a landing again. Well, yeah. They don't like to do that. You see, they're too close together.
It's just as easy as driving.
I can understand that, but do you think that the cockeyed central airport up there is going to be the thing? What does that?
Well, there's times they're not going to be able to use it.
It's
in the wintertime when you get blizzards and fog and stuff. By God, I don't see how they're going to be able to use it.
I just don't see, since both towns have got an airport. Of course, like you say, the big planes won't land in Moscow.
No, they're not landing there now. They quit it years ago. But Lewiston's bullheaded, and they want everything down there, and they're going to wind up not have anything. Because them big airplane companies, they just won't stop at a place like that.
Well, it's a damn
They claim the boardings ain't enough. Well, there's too many people that used to get on at Lewiston from Moscow and Pullman. And it just takes them a few minutes longer to run to Spokane.
Yeah.
If they want to go east, they go get in their car and go to Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
Pullman, Moscow. That's what they tell me they're doing. And it sounds reasonable. They don't go down a little
bit. Don't hop around as much.
That's right. They got a good road to Spokane. Take right over up there. Should you believe Moscow will be in Spokane an hour and a half, and don't have to drive too fast either. It's only 82 miles in Colfax. Drive 67 miles an hour, you're up there in a little bit.
You know, if they'd build a decent road from Lewiston to Moscow, which would be very simple to do, that one they're going to build, I sure don't approve of that. I think come right up the Cockeyed Canyon and take up one of those draws.
They got a natural.
They got a natural.
They come right up Hathaway Creek until they get to that north fork of Hathaway Creek, and it comes out right at the old Archibald and the Erickson place, and it's right south of Genesee. It'd just be one main turn in the road. That's where they'd turn up the north fork of the Hathaway Creek, and they got a straight road all
over. It wouldn't be very far, too.
It'd be a real...
A water grade.
Mm-hmm. Lewiston wants everything... You see, it wouldn't take off down below Lewiston. It'd take off up there by Hathaway Creek. Mm-hmm. And Lewiston's so afraid that somebody is going to take off and not take off in Lewiston. They want to take off right out there by Dunflicks. I saw this piece showed in the Tribune a while back. Take off right there, you know. Well, maybe it'll be
that's
all right. But I think the Hathaway is the best grade.
Why, well, are they?
Question.
Bob, I think, come on up to the next, what do they call that? Little Bear Creek?
Well, it's Coyote Grade.
Well, yeah, but up here at Little, if they go up Little Bear Creek.
A Little Potlatch?
Yeah, a Little Potlatch. They'd come out right up there to, what's the name of that little settlement over there? Well, it'd be pretty near to Cornwall. It'd be right at Cornwall.
Well, Cornwall and Joel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't drive from Lewiston to Moscow wouldn't amount to nothing.
Well, if you want to really get a good road that you wouldn't have to come up to Juliette, you could take up Little Potlatch. It's on the other side of Fix Ridge.
Yeah.
It comes out down to the concrete block schoolhouse. And heck, that comes out up there east of Genesee at Thorn Creek. Thorn Creek Schoolhouse in that Valley Lutheran Church of Genesee is on the head of that creek. And you got just a smooth water grade right up there.
I think that's the place for it to go.
Yeah, but Lewiston wants everything to come out of Lewiston. But they're gonna kick themselves on this airplane business by not getting in and playing ball, because some of these days they're just going about, well, they know in 3 years, if they don't have an airport, they're done. They've told them.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking off flights all the time.
Yeah.
And the more they take off, why the less the boardings they have.
Yeah.
People just get in their car and go to Spokane.
Well, Lewiston's always been pretty jealous of having things.
Well, they always want everything. They got a bunch of businessmen down there that don't see much further than the end of their nose.
I know when Lewiston used to be the capital of Idaho, you know, there was a big fight there to try to take the capital away. They fought for a couple of years. Pretty hard.
And South Idaho stole it.
Yeah.
And they've kicked themselves ever since because we got the University of Idaho up here.
Oh, yeah, Southern Idaho thinks that's terrible.
They've got two big schools down there.
Do you remember the...
And they made a trade, you know. How we come to get the university. And Boise got the penitentiary. You look back years, as the Indian says, years ago in history, way back, and that we had a choice. They'd give us a choice of taking the university or the penitentiary. And we took the university and they took the pen and they kicked their ass ever since. They saw what a mistake they made.
Well, I've always kind of figured that maybe the Coeur d'Alene mines had a lot to do with that.
Well,
university.
The Coeur d'Alene mines is what's... Their taxes don't hurt the state of Idaho anything.
No.
Do you remember the...
Them people down there don't care anything about North Idaho.
Well, do you remember the big fight years ago about trying to make another state out of North Idaho and Eastern Washington?
Well, I remember one time that they was going to take the University of Idaho away from us, and they lacked one vote. And they just one vote of getting it in the legislature.
There was talk one time of cutting off the northern part of Idaho and the eastern part of Washington and making a state out of it.
And the western part of Montana.
Was Montana included in that?
You take the western part
this,
of Montana.
This side, it'd be this side of the divide then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the divide was supposed to have been the line.
Yeah.
And then dadgum surveyors they had that run that line through from down there from Salmon City, you know, you come up there and then you start to go this way, off this way.
Mm-hmm.
And the dadgum surveyors was drunk for days and they kept a bearing too much to the left. And when they got up here in North Idaho, they bore so much to the left, they were putting her over to Washington. And it was supposed to follow the Continental Divide. Well, the Continental Divide is just east of Butte.
Yeah.
That's the Continental Divide. And they were way off. And they never changed it. They let it stand. But that's where it's supposed to be. You look back in your old history and that's where the surveyors got fouled up.
That's
and
what they were told to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And they didn't follow the divide.
The story I heard was that they got confused and between the Bitterroots and the Rockies, and they ended up running along the Bitterroots.
And just kept going off this way to the left all the time. No, western Montana was intended to be.
Yeah, the Bitterroots is a divide now, is it not?
It's not. It's a divide between here and Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Continental Divide is just east of Butte.
Right. Yeah. The Continental Divide was supposed to be the divide. Idaho was supposed to be a big square state.
That's right. No, Spokane, the money of the capital and the earnings of the Coeur d'Alene mines is what built Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
And the water power from the Idaho stream is what built Spokane. And Spokane, eastern Washington, has the same problems as we have against South Idaho.
Yeah.
And they get just what western Washington wants them to have.
Yeah.
But they've got the population over there, see? They just give them the crumbs over here. That's just what we get up here.
Whatever happened to that movement?
Pardon?
Whatever happened to that movement to make a new state?
I don't know. It died. Just like it was born, I guess.
They're going to call it Lincoln. Nothing ever comes out.
They even had a name picked out for it.
Yeah. No, you take eastern Washington, just take in Spokane, and western Montana there. Montana's a big state. You get on the railroad and see how long it takes you to cross that state.
I've driven across it in a car. I kind of know.
It's a long way to cross.
You bet it is.
You're not a kidding.
I never been across it north and south, but I've been across it east and west.
Yeah. You travel all, when I went to Chicago on the North Coast Limited, we left Spokane in the morning, stayed all night in the hotel in Spokane, and we got on at 9 o'clock, or 9:05, so enter just a few minutes before or after 9 o'clock at the MPD pulled there and spoke in, and we rode all day, all that night, and got up next morning and we was over by Miles City.
Yeah.
We were still in Montana. And that old train clips right along, fellow. They don't stop there by the chicken coop. They clip right along 60 miles an hour. And we were still in Montana. We was over there, I know it was just getting daylight, we went through Miles City. And that's a long ways across Montana.
Miles City, quite a place.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. We didn't talk much last time about the Depression, and I know that the 1893 Depression. Somebody told me that a lot of the early homesteaders were busted out by that Depression and had and left. Some went down to Lapway country around there. Did most people in the 30s Depression manage to hold on to their places, Or were there a lot of people, you know,
well,
forced to move then too?
I don't think so. Not
our folks both held on to theirs.
We were just poor in Job, Turkey, but we held on.
Dad and mother was here, sold wheat for 22 cents a bushel and hauled it from here to Moscow with horses.
That was 93?
Hmm?
Was that 93? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Did they ever talk about the difference between the two different depressions?
The difference between the two?
Yeah.
Oh, if they did, I don't remember. But that was a terrible one, I'll tell you. Well, you...
The first one or the second one?
The first one. Oh. The second one was terrible. I went through that. I know what that was. But the first one was a real bad one. You can imagine selling wheat for 22 cents a bushel and hauling it clear into Moscow. And I dare say they had that much in it by the time they got it out there.
On a dirt road.
But, pardon?
On a dirt road and no bottom to the road.
Yeah, it was all on a dirt road and a damn poor dirt road at that. And but they had to haul it and sell it in order to pay what bills they could pay.
The thrasherman had to be paid. A lot of time he didn't get paid.
Yeah. Oh, there were people went busted. I'm sure of that.
There's lots of them went busted.
And
well, my folks was one of the few that got their grain harvested.
Pardon?
My folk, Sam, was one of the few that got the grain in before it rained.
Yeah.
And they had a little company thrash machine here, and he was lucky. He only had just a few acres.
I don't
of wheat, but he got it thrashed before it started raining. But most
I don't remember. At that time, Dad and Uncle Harris was farming together, and they were heading. And their wheat was probably all in the stack. I don't know. I don't know whether it was in the stack or not. But I think it was. I don't...
Well, I know Dad said, by golly, he said it just rained and rained and rained. He said they had had a sack pile. They got theirs thrashed, and they had it covered. And he said, it take four horses on a wagon to pull 10 sacks out of the field. He said he's going pretty much the hub.
Yeah.
Gets out of the field. And hauled it in and stored it in the barn. They live through, but there's a lot of them never saved a kernel. Not a thing. And we think, my God, we have it tough, but I tell you, they really had it rough.
Was that about, you think that was about the hardest thing they had to go through, or was it harder in the first few years? Was it harder to kind of get through a depression, or was it harder to...
Oh, people, in this second depression, we had more, and we were used to more. We all had cars.
Yeah.
Mr. Roosevelt, when he took it over from Hoover, we had cars and better. They were just getting a little better roads. We didn't have much rock on the roads. They never got any rock on the roads around here until we got the old WPA. That's where we got this coarse rock on these roads here. But people were better off in the second one here than they were in that 93.
Oh, in the 93, no. Well, most of them came here and they didn't have anything when they got here, you know.
Right. People in the Roosevelt Depression, they had better homes, better buildings. Most everybody had a car. Sometimes it wasn't a first-class car, but it'd get you there and back. They weren't nothing like you were in the 93, I don't think.
Our car sat in the shed for, I think, 2 years. I couldn't even afford to buy gas for it.
Well, were you still using horses?
Huh?
Were you using horses in the 30s?
Yeah. Horses and mules.
You betcha you use horses.
I've heard mules are pretty hard to handle.
Huh?
I've heard mules are pretty hard to handle.
Oh, no. That's a mistaken idea. I love mules.
He worked them for years.
You think they're easier to handle than a horse?
I liked them better than horses, I really did.
Well, one thing they were famous at, and that was plowing beans.
Pardon?
They were famous at plowing beans.
Oh, yeah.
Them long legs, and boy, they could just walk a horse to death.
Yeah.
They took longer steps.
They didn't walk a horse.
They just walk him to death.
And another thing I liked about them, they all seemed to be even. You know, your horse team, you've always had a damn slow one or something, or a fast one, and the mules, they were all gated about the same.
And another thing, a mule wouldn't step on a bean.
No, a mule walked on a bean
or a corn or be plowing the garden or anything like that. I don't know why, but they just didn't step on stuff. Now, how they could tell, I don't know. the damn horse, you know, he'll drag his feet, you know, if he don't step on it, drag his feet and drag it out of the ground, you know. But a mule walk a horse to death. They're faster, longer legged, and they just get over.
I used to drill a lot with all the drills of mules after I got the mule. They go pretty slow up the hill, but boy, when they got on top, they'd stretch right out.
Just a mule's smart, but they know how to take care of themselves.
Yeah. They just plod along up the hill and they get out on top and they just step right out. Didn't have to encourage them, they just was their nature.
Well, are mules when they get an idea in their head, are they as stubborn as everybody says they are?
Oh, they're stubborn. Mules are stubborn, yeah, but I don't know. That never bothered me any. I didn't have any trouble getting along with them. Maybe because I was just stubborn to do it.
They used to be lots of mules. Woodies, you know, that's all they ever farmed with.
I just mules. Love mules.
Sam Bigham had them.
Sam Bigham.
Remember that old red stub you used to have?
Yeah.
He used to bring him on the bundle wagon. Man, that was a really tall mule.
Yeah.
And he used to work him on the bundle wagon, and he had a big old black mare on one side, and then he had that little Mabel mare, remember, on the other side. Well, that old stub, by God, he could pull that wagon. He could pull as much as them other two together.
Yeah.
Do you think the Depression was a time when a lot of the farms started changing from small farms to big farms?
Oh, that happened. When would you say that happened? About
1929 or 30? That's when the farms started getting bigger.
Well, it got to the point that times were so tough in the early, late 29 and the early 30s, the times were so tough that you just couldn't make it on a small farm.
Another thing, too. Lots of times the kids went off to school, and when they got through school, they didn't come back to the farm. They found out that they could make a living easier than on the farm. And a fellow had, where he's farming 40, there used to be people living on Ridge here, made a living on 40 acres of ground, 80 acres.
Raised a family.
That's so. Right. And they found out pretty soon one guy had 80 acres sold out to another guy that had 160.
Yeah.
And that's the way it went. That movement, I think, started about the time Dad bought the Amlin place in 29.
Yeah. Did it used to be pretty unusual in the early days for a boy to leave the farm? Did most people usually stay on the farm?
Well, us guys here, pretty much all of them stayed on the ridge. But there was a lot of them, by God, went off. They'd go off to school, and a large percent of them never come back.
They
got an education, got a better job, but with less work. But nowadays, there's quite a few of these country boys go to school and come back and farm. But they got Dad to lean on.
Well, back in 32, you could hire a man for a dollar a day, and you could get a damn good man for a dollar and a half. One that really knew his business. Best man I ever had on the place, I paid a dollar and a half.
Buy a work shirt like what he's got on there for 39 cents. 59 cents for a good pair of overalls with copper rivets in the corners. Gee, a coat now is terrible.
Pardon?
A coat. You take a coat now on just to wear around the place.
Yeah.
I was out to Moscow the other day, and I thought I'd get me a Levi. I want to find out where Jack got that coat you got.
Yeah.
But they didn't have my size. They were little bitty ones. And it's just the same as $15. That didn't include the tax. Ain't that a heck? You buy a pair of coveralls and see what you pay for them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're true. Yeah. Oh, you can buy a good pair of overalls for 59 cents, a good work shirt. 39 cents, 2.5 for a pair of shoes, send the Sears Roebuck and Montgomery Ward. That's where we always got our shoes, and it wasn't the right way to do it. That's why my big toes are both crooked. You didn't get a pair of shoes very often, and when you did, you used to tickle to get them. If you could get your foot in it, you wore them, whether they pieced or not. Harry Amling, that's what ruined his feet. So Charlie sent off the mail order, I was getting a pair of shoes that didn't fit for him.
Marvin Long told me about a farmer off of, well, I think it was off of this ridge, who he didn't want to bring his kids into the store because he didn't want, I guess he didn't want them seeing a bunch of things they wanted to get and pestering him about them. Probably. So he used to bring in a stick for each kid's foot.
Yeah.
I guess every fall when he got his crop, he'd bring in a stick for each kid's foot and then he'd shove them until he found the right size shoe. And
another thing, in a big family like that, they could hand them down too.
Yeah.
Kid, you know, by God, wear a pair of shoes and hand them down to his younger brother or sister. Younger. They wore everything out in that day. People in them days were happy at that.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes I think they might be just happier or more happy than they are now. People nowadays are used to so much and have so much that they get bored if they don't have everything plush.
Well, one thing, we didn't have any income tax to pay then. Mm.
Didn't have no income.
Well, there was no income tax. When did they start this income tax business?
Well, we were paying income tax quite a while before Mabel and I got married. I know that. It must have been in the early 20s. It must have been.
When did the co-ops come in out here?
Well, we've had some started pretty early, but they didn't make it. They went belly up. But the first co-op that I remember around here that started was the Kendrick Rochdale.
Well, now,
and then that creamery. Remember that creamery down here?
Yeah.
And then was that Farmer's Hardware.
Now the Farmer's
Hardware was in
Farmers, there. Wasn't it the Farmers Union that...
They were the first ones, and then they went belly up.
Yeah, that...
That is on the ridge here. Now, I was going to school over here on the ridge when it was going.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, the Rochdale was first, as I remember. Right?
Yeah. And the Farmers Hardware, that was a co-op, you know, there.
Yeah.
The Country Kitchen was, and Granddad had stock in it. And then that creamery, you remember down where Doc McKeever's at, they had a co-op creamery, it went belly up.
Yeah.
Well, how did the co-ops are so big today? How did they get started around here?
Well, I don't know. The worst of it is with a co-op is to get a manager that's honest enough that he won't bleed all the profits out and stick it in his own pocket. That's what happens a lot of times. Get some crooked guy
a small co-op is easy to do. Or a bigger cooperation, it wouldn't be too easy.
It wouldn't be so easy. Well, these little ones, you know, by golly, get the wrong man in there, you know, why, he could just bleed it to death.
Yeah.
That happened.
Around here?
Sure it happened around here.
What was the name of that co-op there in Moscow? Ira Havens run it for a while.
Yeah, it was out on West 6th out there. I remember that co-op there.
It's a seed outfit.
Yeah.
What'd they call them? They went belly up, didn't they?
Yeah, they went belly up.
Was that because of bad management?
And that bird that sold that stock and had that one up on Snake River Avenue that I can't... was it called Lewis and Clark? Co-op. I had
that's since I lived on this place, you know, that was started.
You remember that Carlson boy was mixed up
over
there?
Yeah, I remember him real well, old Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce Carlson, he was mixed up in it. But he wasn't the head one. They had a bird over him, and he's the bird got all the money.
Bruce was the guy that sold the stock.
Yeah, he sold the stock, and they made it big. They had a good story and carried a lot of stuff. And then it was an operation about a year, and the first thing on that son of a bitch skipped the country. And he had all the money. They said he went out of there with over $100,000. He went out, and he got out of state, there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. Since then, I haven't been much of a co-op man. And we had another co-op creamery in down here. The one in there where Harold Thomas was, you know.
At one time, that was a co-op.
That's right. We've had two co-op creameries in Kendrick.
How would a co-op creamery work?
Well, they just sold stock in it, hire a manager and a guy, another guy to do the work. And the people, everybody that brings their cream in sells their eggs and cream to them.
And then gets to buy back other stuff at low prices or something?
Well, I don't know if I ever bought anything any cheaper than I could in much places.
No, well, hell, they didn't sell anything except butter.
And then at the end of the year, when they figured out what the expenses was and the profits, and then each guy, according to the amount of stock he had, he got his little...
His little share. Maybe 1%, 2%, maybe not any.
His dividend. Once in a while, they'd have to levy an assessment.
Warmed up a lot since last night.
Yeah, oh, God.
Somebody told me about a group called the Black Hand. Now, it wasn't on this ridge. It was over on Big Bear Ridge. I just wonder if he'd ever heard anything about that.
The Black Hand?
Yeah.
First I'd ever heard about it.
What was the purpose of this?
It was kind of like the mafia.
Oh?
Yeah. I don't know if it was, the woman told me, I don't know if it was just her imagination or if it was something real. I've been trying to kind of chase it down. I tend to think it might have been, she has some bad feelings about some people and decided that they were all organized against her and that was the name of the group. But.
Well, first I'd ever heard of anything like that.
Could have been before our time, though.
Could have been. Well, if it had been something like that, our folks would have known about it.
Yeah.
They'd have told us about it.
Probably told us.
I never heard anything about it.
Yeah, I kind of figured it was, had more fiction than fact.
Could,
in it.
Could be that she had just about lost her marbles.
Mm-hmm.
She was imagining a lot of stuff. And I never heard of anything like that.
We were talking earlier about this, the guy down there on Little Bear, who got flooded out, the sort of hermit guy down there.
Mm-hmm.
Were there hermits and people like that in the early days here? Were there people who never associated much with sort of the building up of the area? You know, are the community life in the area?
He's the only one I ever remember of. Do you remember anybody?
The only one I ever knew was old Jim Reed down here, you know, where Reed's Orchard is in the canyon.
Yeah.
And he lived there alone, but he was perfectly harmless. He wouldn't bother nobody. He used to come up with shark wheat and help Dad harvest several years.
Yeah,
he used to work for the railroad company.
Yeah, you couldn't call him a hermit.
No, but he lived alone down there in a little old shack.
Mm-hmm.
But he was quite a boozer.
Mm.
He's always getting on the plaster. Alcohol, that's why he lost his job at the railroad. He's a telegraph operator, and they couldn't have a drunk telegraph operator. They finally kept it demoting him, and demoting him finally tore out. And he had a little old shack down there. One night he got drunk, and they said, figure this what happened. Kicked the coal out of the lamp on and bring him up in the house. The old cook stove still sits down there. I'd see the time and again. But the shack was here. He burned up in the house.
Do you remember Wiley Carpenter?
Yes, I remember Wiley.
He lived alone. He was harmless.
Yeah.
Finally wound up in
Orfino.
You know? I guess he died over there.
Yeah, he died.
But I never thought, he never appeared to me like he was crazy. I don't know why they sent him over there. Or whether he just went over there. I don't know what the deal was.
Used to go there with Wade and Bigum. Wade and Bigum and once in a while Archie May and Dad. I got in it two or three times. We'd go over there and hunt coyotes or hounds.
Yeah.
And between where he lived and up towards where Helm lived and all that. Used to be pretty timbered country.
Yeah.
In there. And it was a great place to chase coyotes. We'd go there and hunt coyotes around Wiley there. And that's how I come to got acquainted with him. Shucks, I considered him when we were through with that. He wasn't crazy.
No. He used to work on thrashing machines.
Yeah. Go out and make him a grub steak and sometime. Hold up.
I didn't mean crazy.
He never bothered nobody.
Yeah. I just meant I'm trying to get an idea of what kind of people the people were who were the early homesteaders.
Oh.
You know. And what kind of person it was who would come out west, you know, and settle into a new land and And you know, I'm sure there were some people who were, you know, family men and you know, and kind of came out and helped build up the community. And there were some people who were, you know, I was trying to get an idea of the different.
Some of them were bachelors.
Most of them, the first settlers here were pretty well bachelors.
Klaus Eichner and Charlie Cummins.
Frank May.
And your uncle
Martin.
Martin. He was a bachelor, wasn't he? Yeah.
George Doherty, John Roberts, Sam Bigham.
Yeah.
They were all bachelors.
Were they all pretty young men when they came?
Well, I don't know. I imagine they were full of in there around 25, wouldn't they be?
Well, I imagine. I imagine
that. That age. Well, the one thing about them, they were the best-hearted people. And they were neighborly. They'd do anything for each other. If somebody needed help or got in a bind, by God, the neighbors always come and helped him out.
Yeah.
People were neighborly. They aren't sat more than they are nowadays. You know, everybody, they didn't have anything. They didn't have any money, but they were happy. And they'd help the other guy out. They were neighborly. Good people. Good-hearted.
Well, in reality, they were all in it together.
Sure. They were all just alike.
Well, what were usually their reasons, or what were your granddad's reasons for coming out and settling out here, leaving where it was they were before and coming into a new world?
Looking for the rainbow, looking for something better.
Yeah, you know, they're back east. Did hear about what a wonderful country it was out here, and well, why stay where we are? Why not go out there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did.
Yeah, just like the books.
And they could get land for, if they could get a homestead. My dad was about the only guy, I guess, that didn't get a homestead out here. He had to buy his off the school section. But my grandfather, he got a homestead.
Yeah, it was all homestead, mm-hmm. School section.
And your grandfather got a homestead, didn't he, Dad?
No, the fall of the homestead this place, he homesteaded about a year.
I see.
And he took sick with TB and Granddad bought a preemption and finished proving up.
I see.
That's how it was.
But what year did your folks come?
88.
Well, Dad and Mother's a little ahead. They came in 85. And the homesteads was all gone then, except the one that Granddad got.
His name was Jim Turpin. Irishman.
Pardon?
His name was Jim Turpin.
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 Oh, Turpin.
Turpin. Jim Turpin. Mm-hmm. He homesteaded over there in that little 5-acre patch right on the top of the hill past the hay barn up there, and he had a little old sod shack there, and he had a fireplace in it. And it was for years and years there. Once in a while, you'd work a rock out where that fireplace used to be. I haven't seen a rock there for 20 or 30 years, but every once in a while, you'd scratch out a rock there and that further. Where that shack was.
Do you know where Cherry Tree Hill is down here at the old Myers place? They call it Cherry Tree Hill. It's
no.
The first hill the other side of the Myers place. You know, you go up a real steep hill.
Well, you go down and then up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right up on top.
That's Cherry Tree Hill.
Yeah, there used to be an old homestead right up there.
Oh.
And I dug rock out of there one spring. I went over there and worked for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days digging rock out of there. It was I figured maybe it was a cellar, it was a foundation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The rock, the top rock had all been hauled off. But this old foundation was around there and they kept working up.
Yeah.
And they were good sized rock like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And Cyrus Roberts was telling me that one time he went down there. Cyrus's dad had one of the first mowing machines in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the old fellow that lived there was by the name of Judd. And he went down there to do some mowing for Judd. And it came night and Cyrus wasn't true, so they invited him to stay all night. And he was staying all night, sleeping in the barn. And he said for supper, they didn't have any sweet corn, they had field corn. Young field corn, mm-hmm. You know, work got hard. And
Judd had a brother-in-law. They were staying with him, mm-hmm. and he wasn't too bright. And Sire said that guy, I don't know how many years of that field corn he ate, but along in the night, Cyrus woke up and that guy was a groaning. He was just sleeping in the barn with Cyrus. Mm-hmm. And he said, he got up and he staggered around and he said he finally made it down to the house and he hollered, he says, Judd! Hey, Judd! Judd says, what do you want? He says, get a gun and shoot me, Judd! Get a gun and shoot me! He ate as much of that corn that he was in terrible misery. Cyrus told me that one time. You take a cow that pulled down Harry Langdon's, and I was working along the fence right there on top of the hill, mm-hmm. and he come along and he told me that story. He told me who the guy was that lived there.
The Hutchison boys, you know, homesteaded that place down there.
Oh, at the Meyer place?
Yeah. That was always called the old Hutchison place.
Yeah.
And there's two brothers. Yeah. One homestead to the east part and the other in the part of where you live.
Yeah. Well, then where in the devil did Judd come in?
He must have. But that was the two Hutchison's homestead at.
Yeah.
And I think the east part of the place, I think, was over there where you're speaking about. It was over there east towards the canyon. Dad told me where the house at.
Yeah.
And he told me which Hutchison it was, but I can't remember his first name now. But those two brothers homesteaded that.
Well, you see that, the line fence, you know where the line fence is between the Osmond place and Andy's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the line fence that went right on north, you see. That would
be pretty much where that road was.
Yeah.
It goes down where A.W. Jones used to live there in the door.
Yeah, that's the same.
Yeah.
And that would be, it'd be a half a mile from there to the other end and a half a mile from there back to this end.
Yeah.
It was a mile the length of the place. Get a gun and shoot me, get a gun and shoot me.
Were the first few years of homesteading nothing but hard work, or did people manage to get out and have a good time or have a little bit of a joke every now and again?
Well, they used to have literary over here at the old school. I've heard the folks talk about that.
Yes, once in a while over in Sam Bigham's granary.
Yeah. And
upstairs in the granary. I can see that
have
fiddler dentists sitting up there, by golly. Dad's mother used to go to dad's. I don't know who the fiddler was now. I can see him sitting up there playing the fiddle on the, upstairs.
Yeah.
Over the granary there. It's a pretty good sized hall.
And then they built a church. The community went together and built a church, a community church. And it wound up being a Methodist church.
They sold it.
Yeah, I don't know how they got a deed to it or anything, but it wound up as a Methodist church. Mm-hmm. But it was built as a community church. Anybody that wanted to use it was welcome. It was the intention it was built with. And school, I don't know how many. Well, that schoolhouse is down there now. It's the third schoolhouse that was built on that property.
Yeah. George has got the first one.
Yeah.
The old one
is over here at Haven's.
The second one they tore down. Frankie made a residence out of the third one.
Yeah. The third one was partly built out of the second one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lumber in the third schoolhouse that was taken out of the first one, or the second one. But the first one's still intact.
Yep. Yeah, George Haven's used it. Garage.
I imagine your dad went to school in that, didn't he?
Oh yeah, we got pictures of Dad and Jess Ball and Frank and John Brocky. The Bashers.
George was your dad just a boy when he came here?
10 years old. Yeah, there was a bunch of them guys went to school over there, you know. Great big guy, grown men.
Grown men.
Mustaches.
Yeah.
Grown men. Big school. Dad went with 60 over there.
Oh, there was, at one time, there was 48 there, and I've heard several people say that.
Well, I went when I was
40. A one-room school out.
I went when I was 40.
Yeah.
In all 8 grades. I started school there in the fall of 1909.
You know something? When Nona went to school down there, there was Elsie Keene, and there was Nona, and there was Babe Davidson, and there was Elder Roberts, and can't think of my own cousin's name, Mabel Benscotter. They were all in the same grade, all 5 of them.
Yes. And we've got a picture of Carrie Brockie and a bunch about that.
Yeah?
Was going there. She was younger.
Yeah. Carrie was older, wasn't she?
I believe Carrie was a little younger.
Well, maybe she was younger. Anyway,
John Brockie was. John and Frank were just a little younger than Dad.
Yeah.
A year or so.
Anyway, what I was going to say, there's only one of those girls that are dead.
Jess Ball, he went there. He was in the school picture, Jess Ball. George Davidson, Frank and John Brockie, and Dad and the Bashers.
I heard that Sam Callison was a pretty, had a pretty good temper to him.
Well, he was a little fiery, all right.
Did that ever get into trouble?
I'll never forget him and old J.I. Mitchum. They loved one another like two strange bows.
Both of them good Republicans, but they didn't agree.
That was all.
Granddad could put up a pretty nasty fight. When he was a young man, he was a professional wrestler for when he was back east. And he was pretty handy with his dukes. And between the wrestling and the boxing, he put up a nasty fight. And he liked to kill J.I. that time down here in Kendrick, you know.
Huh?
He liked to kill J.I. that time down here in Kendrick.
Yeah, well, they didn't get in the fight the day I seen him. But they was having a tug of war. And I can't remember, I think it was J.I. made a mark in the street. It was just the dirt street.
Mm-hmm.
I think he made a mark with his cane. Can't remember.
He always spoke at the 4th of July. He was always made the patriotic.
Anyway, if it was J.I. that made the mark, Sam come along and rubbed it out and made one to shoot himself.
That sounds about right.
I'll never forget that. And that was, they used to have a tug of war down there. It was always potlatch vs. the world.
Potlatch
vs. the world. Yeah. Boy, those big old Dutchmen.
Yeah, some big men up there too now. Huh.
You bet your life.
Was it from the Potlatch Mill or the camps or what?
Oh, just across the Potlatch Creek down there.
Oh, the Potlatch Ridge.
That took all the Cameron, Southwick, Leland, and all that big country up there.
Potlatch Ridge people.
Potlatch Ridge. Yeah, the world.
And they take everybody on, huh?
Yeah, they take on anybody.
A lot of them big Dutchmen up there were 250-pounders. They were big guys.
One year, I think one year that the world beat them. I remember, maybe I'm wrong. It's been a long time, but I remember old John Woody was on the end of the line. And boy, he was powerful.
He was like a bull.
Yeah. And there was Harry Hupp and Pete. And I can't remember who all was on the rope. But they were all pretty fair men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that year, I believe, that they defeated Potlatch.
Old Hank Black, you remember him?
Yeah,
he's a big old bird, too.
Oh, I'll stay with him.
Big old foghorn voice, you know. Yeah, and I think on our side we used to have Charlie Keeler. You remember how big he was?
Yeah.
God, he weighed that. When he worked at Merrill's down there, he told me he weighed 260. Oh, he was a big man. Them were the days.
Were there used to be a lot of big celebrations like 4th of July?
Oh, we never
like
missed that.
Yeah, every 4th of July.
Oh,
what kind of stuff would happen?
Pardon?
What kind of stuff would happen?
Oh! I don't know. Do they ever have a balloon in Ascension? I don't think they ever did.
They used to have them down in Juliana.
They used to have them in Juliana.
Have what?
A balloon Ascension.
A balloon Ascension?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. The Kendrick didn't have a spot, I guess, big enough for one. I don't know why they did. I don't ever remember one in Kendrick, but I've been to Juliana when
they
had one.
Several down there.
On the 4th of July. I don't know, did they ever celebrate this? They never celebrated. One of them celebrated the 4th of July, the other one didn't.
Well,
but
Juliana usually had a picnic. Some picnic they always had.
Yeah.
And Kendrick always celebrated the 4th of July, and they always had a baseball game, and it ended up in a fight or two.
If they played Juliana at all?
It always ended up in a fight.
Why were there such hard feelings between Kendrick and Juliana?
Well, just same as any two towns close together, just rivalries.
And Juliana always figured that Kendrick would always work him on a baseball game if they could. Poor decisions,
you know,
rotten decisions.
I don't know whether I ever told you or not, but I ran onto a guy up here at the Hot Springs that used to live down here on the Juliana Grade. As I got it, he lived where Stubb Roberts used to live. You remember?
Down the hole there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either, I think that was the place. Anyway, they used to peddle produce, garden produce, turn through to Troy and Moscow. Mm-hmm. And he knew all the guys' names along this road. Hell, he recognized my name right away.
He did?
Yeah. Yeah. And he wanted to know if I lived on that road between Juliana and Troy. Anyway, he said he used to go up to Kendrick. He was just a kid then.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we kids from Juliana, he said, used to go up to Kendrick and play a baseball. And he said, if we beat him, they'd run us home down the railroad track with a baseball bat. Yeah.
How about the other way?
I wished I could think of that guy's name.
Probably the
other
way around, too.
But he remembered all those names up along there. Cox's and Woody's and Roberts's and our name and right on up through Allen's and,
mm-hmm.
and Harlan's, he could remember more.
The Cheney's?
Yeah.
The Archers? Old Ray Archer?
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. And people are all dead.
I don't
care. Been dead for years. The Harlem's. Morrissey's the only one left.
You don't want out, Mr. Dog. Well, it ain't doing
it. You were saying that, was it Sam's J.I. Mitchum? Used to get into arguments about politics?
They were both Republicans, but they used to fight pretty often.
Was politics a pretty sore point with some people? Do people feel pretty strongly about it?
Oh, they took it pretty serious. Well, the time granddad and
they never argued over politics, did they?
Oh, this one, they got into it.
Huh?
This one had a Republican rally down here in Kennedy.
Oh.
And it was right after the town had burnt. And there was only one or two little shacks left in the town. And they were going to have a Republican rally, and they didn't let Granddad know about it.
Oh.
He was left out.
Oh, I suppose old J.I. Mitchum worked it up.
Yeah, he worked it up. And by golly, Granddad heard about it. And when he heard about it, well, the meeting was in progress. And Sam, of course, went down. Just maddering and wet him, you know, because he hadn't been invited. And when he got to the place, why, they was all in there, and J.I. was up making a speech telling what an S.O.B. that Sam was.
Oh, no!
And Granddad walked in the door and stood there and hurt him.
Yeah.
And he made a dive for it. And he got old J.I. got his head under his arm like this. Like that. Thank God, the next day, the folks didn't know nothing about it. And they met old J.I. on the mail route, they used to carry the mail horseback, you know.
Yeah.
And it's going down by the old Johnson place, by the old Seats Orchard, you know, or
yeah.
The old Gordon Orchard. And they met J.I. coming up horseback, and his face was, you could just see a little out of one eye. His face was all covered with gauze and plastered up. Yeah, he stopped to get his mail, and Dad looked at him back, and he said, "You look like you've been out with the boys." He didn't know that his dad had worked him over. Yeah, he just grunted. He didn't go into detail. I haven't got downtown. Dad heard what took place. Oh, they had several fights.
Huh. Well, did most people take their politics pretty seriously?
Oh, I don't believe.
How would politicians campaign around here?
Pardon?
How would a politician if somebody's running for office around here, how would he campaign?
Hell, I can remember when old...
Just have a picnic or a little dinner and have a picnic or something like that, you know?
Well, yeah, I can remember when they'd come down here and give speeches to the schoolhouse, and the schoolhouse would be full.
Yeah.
Guys like, who in the hell was that guy that was in the House of Representatives? Burt Nell French.
Yeah.
I can remember him being down there, and I think old, who was the senator from,
Labora?
Labora. I think Labora even spoke down there.
The old Bora. Yeah, the Lion of Idaho, they used to call him.
Yeah, and of course, sheriffs and things like that from Lattock County.
The county officials.
Officials, they'd come down here, you know, and speak at the...
Now they just get on the air.
I don't remember whether they're all Republicans or not. This county used to be a strong Republican.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't elect anybody but a Republican.
Democrat just will not run.
Huh?
He just will not run.
Yeah.
A Democrat didn't have a vote.
But I don't know when it turned the tide was long about Franklin Roosevelt's administration, I think, when the Democrats started to get in.
Well, didn't Roosevelt have some pretty good programs for farmers?
Well, I thought he did.
He's the one who started it, and they're still using a lot of it yet.
He balanced my budget, and that satisfied me.
There was a lot of Republicans hollered about it. Oh, of course they weren't
still,
in; they were
they're
out.
They're still laying stuff to Roosevelt,
and they hollered about the things that they were doing. And when the Republicans got in, they went right on to the program. You never knew the difference.
Yeah,
never knew the difference.
Well, they had to.
But they knew
they knew if they didn't, they were out.
It was a good program, and it was what the people wanted. And if they intend to stay in business, they better go along with it. And we never knew the difference from one administration to the other, except it got a little tougher all the time.
When Roosevelt was elected, I remember old Wade Keene said to me, "Well," he says, "I suppose you think you're going to get a dollar for your wheat this fall." And I said, "No, Wade." I said, "I don't. But I said, I think I will get 4 bits. And we did.
Yeah.
And hell, it was only about 28 cents then.
Wade was a good guy, but oh, he could be the most.
Oh, he was the most obnoxious goddamn politician. He was a rotten Republican. Yeah, he laid everything to Roosevelt.
He hadn't forgot the Civil War. He was still fighting the Civil War, you know.
Yeah.
He was always calling about the Civil War. You know. I saw Wade one time. He was the maddest man. I think the maddest I ever saw Wade. I was hauling wheat, and I had that old 26 Chevrolet truck, and it was just a year or two after we'd had it. And Wade was hauling wheat with a company freight machine. He was driving a grain tank, hauling town with horses. In the town, I had this old Chevy truck, and it was over there at the roadstead. That's where we used to always haul first. There, as everything went to the roadstead. There was a traveling man there. Just happened along, a traveling man, and I don't know how it happened. But Wade, when I drove up there, by God, him and Wade was in an argument. And he was just as rabid a Democrat as the way he was a Republican. He was smart. This traveling man was well posted. And by golly, the traveling man was making it pretty rough on Wade. Finally, he just got disgusted and he turned around and left, turned around to leave Wade. And as he started to leave, he said to Wade, he said, "You don't know enough about what you're talking about to ask questions." Boy, talking about being mad. That's putting it pretty strong. Yeah, I never forgot that. You don't know enough about what you were talking about to ask questions. Wade was of this opinion. He was for the two-party system.
Pardon?
He was for the two-party system.
Yeah.
But the Republicans should always be in power.
Yeah.
That was his strategy, or his, what he went on that there should always be a two-party system, but the Republicans always be in power.
Well, I may be mistaken, but I think that Watergate is going to help both parties.
Well, it may clean up a lot of stuff.
That's right. I think it's going to show them just what can happen to them if they get too far out of line.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it, but what Nixon was too far out of line.
Well, did in other scandals like, you know, Teapot Dome and things like that, did that kind of have the same effect? Did things get cleaner for a while?
Yeah, but it wasn't a drop in the bucket to what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you, in Teapot Dome, poor old Harding was not to blame. It was these underdogs that did the whole damn work, and they killed Harding.
Mm-hmm.
But he came forward. You know, he didn't try to cover up anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been a president. Hell, Nixon ain't the first president that was ever in trouble. There'd been, even old Lincoln was in trouble. But he came forward. He was there, by God, when they opened the door to have the hearing, and he was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a bunch of crooks that just knocked the... pulled the chair off from under Harding.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
It killed the old boy.
Yeah.
It really did. Well, Mrs. Harding said that she was never so sad in her life as when Harding was elected president, because she knew what was going to happen, because she knew the guys that put him in there.
Yeah.
They elected him, and they elected him for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He's a man that they figured they could use.
Yeah. Oh, I think he was a perfectly honest man.
Well, I tell you, it's got so nowadays that politics is vicious.
Oh, terrible.
They don't stop at nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, old Nixon didn't. God, look at the dirty tricks he pulled. Wow.
Can't help it. He might not have done a lot of it, but he knew what was going on.
He knew
nodded his head.